Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, BaltimorePositive.com. We are we're out doing our thing here this week, man. We've got football in progress with like a real mini camp happening this week. Orioles come home. They're going to be playing the Braves all week. And then, of course, the Phillies over the weekend. We got Fleet Week happening this week. We will be giving away the scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery, the Pac-Man remaining, as well as some Lucky Sevens. We will be at Coco's. I'm wearing my Coco's. See, I was Luke was established in 1983. My kid was established in 1984. And Coco's Pub was established in 1985. And we'll be there on Wednesday. My co-host with a K, Rasig, will be there with us, Max Weiss from Baltimore Magazine. She just won some awards. She better not be pooping on my Royal Farms Western fries. That's the only thing we're not going to let her do. I'm going to have a – I might make her eat some Royal Farms Western fries right there at Coco's on just to talk through – what she doesn't know what's good is like my mother would tell her, but she's not from around here. Also on Wednesday, Damian O'Doherty, who is from around here, he's West Side. He'll be with us over at Coco's. Friday, we're going to be down for Fleet Week at Cooper's Tavern on, we would say, on the square in Fells Point, off the square in Fells Point, on the cobblestone across in the Pendry. They're also doing crab cake contest, bands, music, booze, and flying over, above, ships, here, there, everywhere. It's Fleet Week, Maryland Fleet Week. We'll hear from Chris Rosum, as well as Dorothy Fuchs, my friend Patrick Russell from Cooper's, as well as Terry Beck. We were up at Cooper's North last week. We had Thomas Dolby with us for breakfast over at State Fair. Had a great morning, man. I mean, Dolby and I just had breakfast for an hour and then did radio for an hour. And then I hung out with Howard talking old rock and roll and hockey. So all that's going to air this week. That was from State Fair last week. Coco's this week on Wednesday. Friday, we are at Cooper's downtown. Next week, we're at Costas. And I was trying to talk Mr. Costas into coming on next week. He keeps ducking me. I mean, he's like a prize fighter. He's ducking me. But I'll be there next Thursday. The Orioles will not be ducking the Yankees next Thursday in the third game of a three-game set. We'll be there from 1 until 4 on Thursday. Jessica Vallis, who just did our brand-new website from Hartford Designs, is going to be our guest on Thursday, amongst others. And then on the 25th, Tuesday the 25th, we'll be at Pappas in Parkville. And I am... stacking up guests for that one because I'm going to enjoy that. By the way, Pappas, Luke, people ask, like, do my crab cake sponsors, they know each other? In some cases they do, in some cases they don't. But the one thing you know, because having met all of them, you've been to Coco's, you've been to Fadley's, they all kind of get along and are in the same business. I went to Costas on Sunday to watch the Adley Rutschman show. And the Grayson Rodriguez show. I might want to point that out as well. And we got these giant crabs, and I had some corn on the cob. And I'm there, and Mr. Costas comes up. He always wants to buy me beer, and I'm driving. My wife's in a cast. No beer for me. Then he wants to give us desserts. And they have this Greek dessert. They call it Let Your Booty Grow. And, you know, but it's like a, I don't know how to say it. But Mr. Costas came up. And he says, hey, I'm playing in the golf tournament tomorrow for Pappas. And I'm like, you know, people think that the Pappas people and the Costas people can't get along. And it's kind of like when I got Tomlin on stage with Harbaugh and Billy. We can all play. It's like the wrestlers, you know. So every once in a while, there'll be an old picture of Andre the Giant drinking with the bad guys at a bar somewhere. We all try to get along here. So big love to the Pappas folks for their golf tournament, which is happening as I look out the window here today on a glorious, glorious spring day, scheduled to be 75 and perfectly sunny for the Pappas golf tournament. So there, I think I plugged everybody. Luke, how are you? Feeling good, right? I mean, we got practice with most of the players being healthy in the Ravens organization. We've got the Orioles taking on top-notch competition with the Braves and the Phillies coming to town and really hitting the ball well, and they're just playing great baseball. I don't know what else to say. We can worry about this and worry about that and whatever's going to come along, but not too much to complain about in the land of pleasant living when you're eating pit beef, eating crabs, getting Silver Queen corn, you know, and completely, perfectly ripe, and then finishing it off with a snowball. The beer is cold in Baltimore, Maryland, Luke Jones.
No doubt about it. And Sunday finished it off with an Adley Rutschman grand slam. I mean, look, we've talked about this a lot. I'm going back a couple weeks ago, they're swept by St. Louis. You know, my grumpy old man rant about the streak ending and all of that stuff aside, You saw how they responded after that. They played good baseball. Toronto series, they win the first two, they lose the last two. Disappointing, missed opportunity to take a series from the Blue Jays. How did they respond? They go down to St. Petersburg, and again, this weird series with this Monday night finale, but they take care of business and they hit the ball, and they really hit the ball in the late innings in a couple of these games to make a close game not so close as they did on Saturday and Sunday. Friday night, they hit three home runs, backing up Cole Irvin, and the bullpen was really good behind him. I mean, look, they have their relative issues. We've talked about that. And we'll continue to talk about the pitching and the bullpen, and do they need another starter, and what's going on with Cedric Mullins, and is Mullins going to stay in the majors? Are they going to option him? What are they going to do? Jorge Mateo, Jackson Holliday, all the different issues that we talk about with this team, we need to continue to remind ourselves they are all very relative, and it's the kind of issues that other teams around baseball envy, that they would say, oh, those are your issues? That doesn't sound too bad. So, really good weekend for the Orioles offensively. Was great to see Anthony Santander swing the bat the way he has on this road trip as it hits another home run. And he's finishing up, a nice stretch for him after, he's kind of been the one we haven't talked about as much in the outfield, but certainly wasn't having the best start to his season, and still isn't overall, but has certainly been heating up of late. Even Cedric Mullins got two hits on Sunday. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's what fixes him, but it was good to see. But by and large, over the weekend, they swung the bats. And like I said, they really swung the bats late, which tends to be the MO for this team. But I don't know, Nestor. I mentioned Adley Rutschman, and we've talked a lot about him not drawing walks anymore. And we spent a whole segment at Fadley's a couple weeks ago talking about the Orioles' lack of walks as a team. And I said how much of that was driven by Adley Rutschman, but Adley Rutschman's batting over 300 and a slugging 490, as we're getting into the middle of June. He's doing something right. This isn't something where he just forgot how to walk. This is something very deliberate from a strategic standpoint, from an approach standpoint. And it's very difficult to argue with the results. And let's be clear, I'm sure Adley Rutschman will have some periods of time between now and the end of the season or next year or the year beyond. He'll draw walks, and he can still do that. I don't think he forgot how to do that. I think this is something that was identified with him and the hitting coaches and the analysts in the organization to say, hey, be more aggressive in these certain spots. And lo and behold, he's doing that. And it's difficult to argue with the results, especially on the heels of a three-hit day, a six RBI performance capped off with a grand slam in the eighth inning on Sunday.
I'm going to go old guy on you for a minute here, just through my history of watching elite players, like really good players, that the reason they're elite and they're awesome is they made it not an adjustment or two adjustments, or go look at Cal Ripken's batting stances over 20 years, right? You know what I mean? So this is where I start to geese and I bring it in. But, a Robin Yount, a Paul Molitor, PJ Surhoff, I'll throw him in there because they give you three Brewers of that era that were all really special players. They moved positions. They moved batting stances. They moved places in the order. But go look at the back of their baseball cards. And in the case of Surhoff, it's probably unfair because he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's a Hall of Consistency. whatever he was, he stayed and remained and never regressed from. And I bring him up as a 1-1, and I guess I just threw him in because the other Brewers are Hall of Famers. But I think about adjustments that players can make, whether it's Machado saying, are you a shortstop, a third baseman? I don't know, but you're a ball player and we'll figure out a place to play you. Whether you're Dale Murphy, you come up a catcher, we'll make you an outfielder. Gary Carter, any of those kinds of players, the reason you have 10, 12, 14, 16 years in the big leagues is that not only are you a growth mindset with a glove and with what you can do running the bases or not, if you're Ken Singleton, if you're station to station, you realize what you are and what you're, but maybe you're a bunter, maybe you hit behind, but maybe you find some other way to stick around. But these guys that are really special, and I guess I would use Yount and Molitor, and I use Surhoff because he was a 1-1, special, special guys. Once they get to this level, and this speaks to Jackson Holliday and whatever he's going to be, is you always feel like especially if you're Sig Meidel and you think like that, or Mike Elias, and you know you're a Ivy League guy and you brought these guys in to do what you couldn't do because he couldn't pitch at that level. He would admit that, but he knows how to grow baseball players. They're going to make adjustments and they're going to get better. And whatever you tell a guy like Rutschman to do, he's so special to begin with that if he can take it to heart and the science of it makes sense and you get it to make sense to him, that they can go into a cage, get their feelings hurt a little bit in the winter and maybe come back out and be something a little different, a little better. And that speaks to what they think Holiday is going to be and where they believe Gunnar Henderson's going. And I guess all of this, Luke, to bring it back to the team, is I look down on the stats and I see six guys at the top of the order slugging 500. It's like they have weapons. And if it's not today's day for Ryan Mountcastle, it'll be tomorrow's for Westberg. And that's what's so good about them is that – yeah, it's Rutschman's day the other day, and by the end of the week, Henderson will hit two or three more. And, you know, Santander feels like he caught a little something over the weekend, although I'd like to see the average up for a couple of these guys, just in the old guy way of me, whatever that's on-base percentage, walks, moving counts, but just putting the ball in play and getting hits, getting on base, seeing more of that at a 300 clip than a 200 clip. Just in a general sense, I don't like guys hitting 227 in general. I don't think that's sustainable, but it is in this lineup where everybody else is doing something else. This is a really special group of players, man. I mean, all the way through, but Rutschman, every day you want to talk about Henderson, every day you're feeling good about Westberg, every day we're mooing for Couser. By the way, the moos were mooing at Costas as he rolled into third base. A lot of triples too on Sunday. This team's just incredible. It really is.
It really is. And I'll continue to remind, and I look at the overall run scoring environment in Major League Baseball. Offense is way down. And you know, what your point about the batting average is fine. You know, although I'm the type that I'm going to evaluate the whole picture, batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage. And when you look at this team, I saw a stat the other day. I'm not going to bore you with going through all of it, but it was, it broke down the teams by the number of hitters that they have, talking about qualified hitters, enough plate appearances, obviously, with an OPS of over 750. You know, so that's on base plus slugging percentage over 750. There's one team in Major League Baseball who has six guys that fit that description, the Baltimore Orioles. Now, this was as of a couple of days ago. It may have been tweaked a little bit here and there. There's one team that has five guys with an OPS of 750 or higher. That's the Dodgers. Yankees, Houston, San Diego have four guys. The rest of baseball, there are four teams that don't have anyone with a 750 OPS.
Well, let's go back to the 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22. How many Mullins that one year, you know, like, but how many of our guys, one or two in every lineup, maybe some years?
Right.
But
yes, but the point is with that, in 2019, go look at home runs and offense around baseball. I mean, guys were hitting everywhere, except in Baltimore, except for a couple guys, you know, Trey Mancini and a couple others that, you know, you've since forgotten. But again, offense is so bad. I looked at the number the other day. The league average, as of, I think it was Friday, the league average OPS, which anyone who follows OPS, you know, I've kind of viewed an 800 OPS is kind of the, you know, not knowing what offense is like around baseball, that's kind of the benchmark for, hey, that's a good to really good hitter. You get into 900 and 1,000, and then you're talking about Gunnar Henderson, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge kind of guys, right? But
the Judge numbers this month.
Oh, crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, Gunnar's doing what he's doing, and now Judge is, you know, separated a little bit as far as the home run lead. But the league average OPS as of a few days ago, Nestor, was 699. It's under 700. So the reason I point that out is not to bore people who aren't as statistically minded. It's to just point out that what the Orioles are doing relative to the rest of the league offensively, it makes their offense look even better. And that's my point. That doesn't mean it's perfect. Cedric Mullins, major struggles. You know, two hits aside on Sunday, you know, there's been lots of talk of whether they're going to use a minor league option on him or not. I mean, the fact that we're discussing that even speaks to how much he struggled. And, you know, you mentioned Santander. We've talked about Austin Hayes. But When
what
you
about
see
Cowser's? Cowser
Henderson
hitting
and Rutschman
180
do.
since the beginning of the year. I mean, he, you know, like since the first 3 weeks, these last 5 or 6 weeks, he's a sub two. He's a sub
So
Mendoza guy, right?
here's what is really complicated about him, and you're right. I mean, the average since about the final week of April, it's been rough. One, he draws walks, so that helps his overall value in the same way we talked about Gunnar Henderson the first 2 months last year. Remember, Gunnar was hitting second week of May, go back and look, he was hitting like 175, 180, but he was walking a ton. So while he's figuring that out, he's still bringing some value to your lineup. So Cowser's doing that. The other thing, and this is where StatCast and all the batted ball data that we now have the benefit of, instead of just anecdotally saying, oh, he's hit into a lot of tough luck. And if you watch the games, he's hitting the ball hard, but he's hitting it right at people. And we always said that at various times about hitters in the past. You know, if you actually watch the games, you would see, oh, you know, Cal Ripken's hitting into some tough luck the last couple of weeks. He's squared up a number of balls and, you know, went right to the shortstop or right to the left field or whatever. If you look at Cowser's batted ball profile, he's really continued to hit the ball hard. He's hit into some tough luck. Now, I'm not saying that to completely absolve him. He still has a little more swing and miss to his game than you would like, ideally speaking. But the point is with that, I'm telling you, I'm not as worried about him when you look at his average exit velo and the number of times he's barreling up the ball and all those different things you can look at, which I'm not saying is the end all be all, but it peels back some layers and it tells you how a player's swinging the bat compared to Cedric Mullins, who's not getting results and he's not hitting the ball hard even. So, you know, aside from a couple times, and look, I'm hoping with Mullins, you know, I had two hits on Sunday. Maybe that's the start.
He squared a couple balls up over the weekend as well. He had two really bad at bats that were like, man, you know, I can't buy a hit, you know?
Right. So, it's one thing for fans just to look at the stat page, you know, the stat sheet or the box score. It's one thing for media to look at that. But if you're the evaluators in the organization, if you're the coaching staff, if you're Brandon Hyde, if you're Mike Elias, and you're trying to figure this out because, hey, Jorge Mateo is going to be coming off the concussion list here shortly. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to send Norby back down? Or, as some people have at least asked, is Cedric Mullins in jeopardy in terms of being sent to Norfolk? I don't know. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that he should be, but I mean, you got to perform, and it's really been a massive struggle for him for about 2 months now. You know, he had that stretch in mid-April that looked really good. He hit that walk-off, and since then, look at the numbers. It's been really ugly.
He's also a guy that could go down to Norfolk for 3 weeks and hit 380.
Sure.
And come back up when Cowser turns an ankle in early August.
Sure.
And perform. I mean, you know,
I mean, I'm not
a guy that's over the hill or a guy, you know, a guy that's a one-hit wonder who's only, you know, and also a tool guy, you know,
sure,
a guy that has other skills as well. So, you know,
I mean, I
it's
think
tough. I mean, I even tweeted out over the weekend. I'm like, it's tough to watch him struggle because people have such fondness for him. They do.
No doubt about it. And again, I'll continue to use this example. Jorge Mateo at this time last year, you know, had really started to fall off. And by August, everyone was asking, why is this guy still on the roster? And the answer at that point, one, he was out of options, so you didn't want to lose him. But the point with him was, okay, he's not hitting, but he's fast. It's a pinch-running option for you late in games, and he can defend. And he can defend at shortstop. And if something happens to Gunnar Henderson, then that changes the equation. A year later, Mateo has performed at a much higher level, right? I mean, he has at least solidified his standing as a utility guy for them moving forward. I mean, I think that much is pretty evident considering his skill set, which now he's added playing really good defense at second base to what he could already do. My point with talking about Mateo is exactly what you just said. You do have minor league options with Mullins. If the organization deems it valuable or useful for him to go down to Norfolk in a lower pressure environment and work some things out, if there's something very specific they want to work out with his swing, then they'll do that. I think they would do that. However, he does give you great defense in center field. He is a speed option for you off the bench. And we'll also point out, it's not as though the rest of their outfielders have played so great collectively that, you know, Mullins has been the worst. There's no disputing that, but it's not as though they have three other guys that are playing at all-star levels in the outfield where then, okay, send them down. Now, they might decide to send them down, or they might have said, hey, Sunday, two hits, see how he plays, you know, see how this goes the next couple weeks. Mateo coming back, is Connor Norby going to play all that much? You know, do you really need both those guys, or is that kind of a redundant scenario there? So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think they were what was interesting to me was Mateo plays, or not Mateo, Mullins plays three straight days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He had played Wednesday in Toronto. So he played four out of five games going into this Monday night finale. I found that in and of itself to be interesting from the standpoint of, was that perhaps them looking at this and saying, all right, we're going to give Cedric a legit chance here to try to bust out of this, with the thought being that maybe they are considering sending him down. So, and you know, do two hits on Sunday change their decision there? I don't know. Again, you look at all of it and it's been a struggle. That's why I said his struggles compared to Kowser, you know, having a stretch where he's been sub 200, but still hitting the ball extremely hard and still drawing walks. You know, it's been a massive struggle for Mullins, but you know, how do you feel about your other options in center field? Okay, Kowser can play center field. Who's going to be the backup? You know, you have to consider that. What about your speed off the bench? What about your defense in the in all three outfield spots? So, you know, I'm not saying this to be, you know, a ringing endorsement for Cedric Mullins, but you do have to weigh all these things. And again, there's also the human element here of, will it be something that he responds favorably to, or knowing him as a human being and trying to, because the end goal is to get him straightened out, right? I mean, fans and media, we talk about guys in terms of struggles, and sometimes it's almost like it becomes, you want to punish the guy.
Yeah, this is not a punitive action. This
right,
is
you're
a, like,
trying
we're in a pennant race, and 180 is not going to make it go.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We have other bodies around here. Don't make us, don't put us in a bad spot.
Right.
And I would think for you to say that they played him over the weekend to kind of say in or out.
I thought...
I
don't know
it
that
might
for,
be
yeah.
in at this point. I mean,
yeah, and I don't know that for sure, but it just felt a little bit different because we've seen Mullins' playing time decline the last few weeks. I think we've all seen that. Now, I will also point out Stowers left Saturday's game with a sore wrist. You know, it doesn't sound like it's serious, but he wasn't in the lineup Sunday. And we know Hayes got plunked at the end of the Toronto series in the ribs, and he was sore and missed a couple, you know, hasn't played a whole lot since
then.
That was
nasty, too, that.
Yeah, game. Yeah. So the point with that is, perhaps it's just circumstantial that he played as much as he did over the last 4 or 5 days, but
well, then they're glad they have him when guys
yeah,
get hurt.
And that's where you look at this and look, I mean, another point to what you just said. Yeah. They're trying to win games, and yes, it's a performance-based business. I mean, you have to perform. We've seen that. I mean, Cedric Mullins got sent down 5 years ago, all the way down to Double A after he had made his debut in the majors. So it's not as though they're, you know, that they are opposed to doing this, but there's also the flip side of, how do we unlock this? How do we get him on track? Is it sending him down? Is it giving him fewer starts in the majors and he's taking early BP, which, by the way, he's been taking early BP for weeks. I mean, this isn't a case of him not working hard. I can tell you that much. You know, whatever the disconnect is in terms of him not performing like he's capable of performing in the past is not through a lack of effort. You know, I can assure you of that. But what's best for him? What is going to get him on track? Is it possible that sending him to a less, you know, a lower pressure environment like AAA for a few weeks to reset, clear his head, not have cameras and you know, eyes on him every single night in the same way that you do in the major leagues? I don't know, you know, and perhaps, I mean, as someone's listening to our conversation, maybe the Orioles make a move, or maybe they decide to stick with him and continues to be a case where he platoons and isn't playing every day, but continues to work behind the scenes with the major league hitting coaches and maybe he busts out of it. So it's a tough proposition, because what exactly do you do? And, you know, Buck Showalter used to always talk about this, and he wasn't the only one who had this idea, but there's always that idea with someone that is struggling and their playing time starts to diminish where they say, well, I'd play better if you'd play me more, but what does the manager or the head coach going to say? Well, I'd play you more if you were playing better. So, you know, how do you get that aligned? You know, how do you get him in a position to try to get him going? And, you know, that's what's tough. I mean, they're trying to figure it out. We're talking about a former all-star here, a former silver slugger 30-30 guy. And I get it. It was 3 years ago. I'm not saying that gives him a pass. The point is, you're trying to figure out how to get him right. You're not trying to punish him or embarrass him or send him down to AAA because you're mad at him. But at the same time, you have a duty to an obligation to the rest of this team, the organization, the fan base, that you need to put your best foot forward. And Cedric Mullins knows that in the same way that Austin Hayes understood it earlier in the year when he was benched and basically lost his starting job to Colton Cowser, which he still hasn't gotten it back, even with him coming back off the IL and being better since then. So, you know, there's a lot.
That was the worst part for me with Hayes taking it on the ribs, is that, like, you could almost feel this hurts, but you almost feel like, damn, I just got going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I just, and this isn't, he knew the next week was going to be a struggle to pick up a bat because of where he got hit. I think everybody on the bench knew that at the moment, you know, that he was out of first base and Brian Ebel comes out. I'm like, oh man, you know, we just got going.
Yeah. And in fairness, he had an at bat on Saturday and he got a hit even. So, you know, hopefully he's fine and in a position where, you know, he won't miss much time. But that was also something I wanted to at least throw out there as we're talking about Mullins and what's going to happen here. I mean, again, two hit day on Sunday is great to see. I mean, his triple, you know, that came at a big time, you know, when they were kind of looking at a, you know, it was a close game at that point. So that was good to see, you know, no doubt about it. At the same time, when you don't want to overreact to struggles, but you also don't want to overreact to, it was a couple hits, you know, let's see what this looks like.
The question would be, you don't want to look up and see him going one for 18 this week against the Braves and the Phillies because you gave him five starts.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. I mean, it's, you know, they're looking, and that's where I, you know, for Santander to come alive here, hit, what, four home runs on the road trip, you know, to this point. Good to see. You know, we've talked about it with Cowser. Even if the contact has continued to be good, you know, and indicates that more success is coming, you know, he hasn't gotten the results. You know, we've talked about Hayes. We've certainly talked at length about Mullins. You know, Kyle Stowers is the guy that, you know, I'd still like to see him get a few more opportunities. But at the same time, if you're Brandon Hyde, you're trying to get your veteran guys going that have a track record. It is a balancing act here. And I understand that. And look, for every lineup Brandon Hyde's going to write out at this point in time, with the number of talented players they have on the 26-man roster, let alone talking about anyone at Norfolk, someone's going to complain about something. And I get that. I mean, that's baseball. That's the discourse on a daily basis of baseball. That's fun. I'm not criticizing that. But it just speaks to, again, this is a good problem to have, but you are trying to figure this out in terms of optimizing your chances to win on a nightly basis, but also thinking in the big picture in terms of, how do I get this guy going? You know, I don't want Mullins to, you know, if he's going to be in the major league on the major league roster, I don't want him to sit seven straight days. I mean, is that really going to be conducive to him breaking out? At the same time, I can't start him seven straight days if he's not producing. So yeah, there is a challenge here. That's why it's so valuable to have Gunnar Henderson with 20 home runs, Adley Rutschman slugging 490, Jordan Westberg, who, you know, scuffled a little bit in that Toronto series, snapping out and breaking out and having a good Tampa Bay series.
Is Henderson going to have 30 home runs at the All-Star break? Looks that way, right?
I mean, at this point, I mean, it's amazing. And I saw the factoid over the weekend talking about, you know, with his age being a leadoff hitter. And what was the, I can't remember what it was, kind of an arbitrary thing. But he was the first time in Major League Baseball someone has done all of those things in the same year. And it just speaks to, it's also mid-June, and he already has done that. I mean, it speaks to how impressive this kid is. Like I said, I think it was a 22-year-old shortstop, leadoff hitter, and I can't remember but point is, it's something that hasn't been done. And for him, I was talking to someone actually during Ravens mini camp last week, or OTAs last week, I was talking to someone else who, you know, obviously follows the Orioles, and they said the same thing that I did. I constantly find myself completely forgetting that Gunnar Henderson's 22 years old. I mean, because he is that great. I mean, it really is remarkable. And I think back to how we thought about Manny Machado at age 22 and the prodigy that we viewed him as, regardless of, you know, sometimes being a hothead or not running it out the first base, just the pure talent, right? Just the ability.
I'm waiting for Henderson to act like a chump, to act like a young guy. I mean, Machado still acts like a chump. You know what I mean? Like, I'm waiting for that immaturity to show up in some, optical way for me from afar, from the bench, from here, body language, this, that, post-game press conferences, eating pizza after the game, whatever it is, I don't see it from afar, you know?
Right. I mean, the only thing I would say that ever at this point reminds me that he is really young, every once in a while, look, he plays really good defense at shortstop, really good, especially for a guy his size. I mean, he's Cal Ripken with more athleticism, you know, in terms of how big he is, and but he can just move way better than Cal ever did. And look, Cal's a Hall of Famer. I'm not disparaging him. I'm complimenting Henderson. But the one thing that he does every now and then, he'll try to make a superhero kind of play defensively, and he'll throw the ball away. But for every time he does that, how many times does he do something where he wows you defensively? So you got to take a little bit of that, but that's about the only example. But, you know, just to go back to my point, I was putting aside anything with, you know, Machado in terms of what you were just mentioning, but, you know, I think of Manny as a 22-year-old, and now I see what Gunnar Henderson's done as a 22-year-old. And I say this as a compliment to him, because Manny Machado, you know, health concerns are starting to peak up on him more frequently here the last couple years, but go look at his numbers. I mean, if Manny performs for another 5-6 years at a high level, relatively high level, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, he's in that conversation, certainly. So for Gunnar Henderson to do what he's done at age 22 and to kind of look at him right now, and dare I say, and again, I don't say this lightly, you know me, Nestor, I'm not a hot take artist or anything, but to look at him and to feel like he has a higher ceiling than I thought Machado did at age 22, my goodness. I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous, because I thought Machado had an incredibly, incredibly high ceiling at age 22. So, I mean, it's just, he's fun to watch. You know, he's going to be an all-star. You know,
as an example, let's give an example here. Machado in 21 had 28 home runs, hit 278, 106 RBIs. 22, he had 32 home runs, 102 RBIs, hit 298. 23, 30 home runs, 91 RBIs, he had 258. So a little bit, you know, consistency. Henderson's going to have 30 at the all-star break, dude. Like, what?
But you're also comparing apples to oranges. You're talking about Machado in his late 20s into his early 30s. Think about what Henderson is at age 22 compared to what Manny Machado was in 2013, 14, 15.
He's 31 right now. You're right.
Yeah. 10 years ahead. Yep. So, but that's my point. That's my point. When you look at what, and look, Manny Machado, go look at how many doubles he hit in 2013. I mean, crazy. You know, he was an all-star. His first
51 doubles.
Yeah. But you look at this, and again, I don't say this even, you know, because you tend to be a prisoner of the moment, and recency bias really plays in big time when you're comparing players like this. But to even suggest that Gunnar Henderson, it feels like Gunnar Henderson has a higher ceiling than Machado did as a 22-year-old, just speaks to how special of a talent he really is. Because as I said, Manny Machado has a chance to be a Hall of Famer, you know, at this point where he is right now, if he can stay healthy and produce for another 5 years, let's say. So, I mean, that's just, it's silly. It's ridiculous what he's able to do. And, you know, that's why I said, even with some of the, you know, when you talk about Mullins or Hayes or other guys that are scuffling and, you know, not performing to the level that they're capable, when you have Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman at the top of the lineup, in the same way that the Yankees, same thing with Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, who Soto was banged up over the weekend, and their offense scuffled a little bit, you know, until Sunday anyway. So, you know, it just speaks to, well, newsflash, MVP caliber players are really, really, really valuable. Shocking, I know, but just speaks to what these guys are doing and just how impressive it really is.
Because you're in the real media and I'm not, I'm assuming you get a vote for the MVP of the team and whatever. It's fascinating that if I had a vote, I don't, you know, right now, if I have to vote today and you have to split a hair, where do you go? I mean, you would say Henderson, maybe. I know you're a Henderson guy.
Undisputed.
This Rutschman part, where Rutschman starts to make his own case for this and saying, dude, I'm a catcher. I'm the rah-rah guy. I'm the straw that stirs the drink. I'm the reason the team has turned around. Like, he would never say that. I can say that, though, on the radio. I don't know, man. Rutschman's making his own case. That even in a year where Henderson's going to hit 48 home runs or whatever, Rutschman's making his own case for his value to say, yeah, you like Tony Perez and all that, but I'm Johnny Bench, you know?
Yeah, and let me be very clear. When I say it's Gunner undisputed for me, that is not to take anything away from what Rutschman is doing. It's just that Gunnar Henderson right now, home runs, positional value, base running, like I said, defense, all of that, he's right now on track when you look at those numbers, and you could just look at the counting stats, right? But also in terms of war, he's got a chance to be the – Cal Ripken has the two all-time war seasons in franchise history. Gunnar Henderson has a chance to eclipse that. I mean, he has a chance to be an 11-win player, which is just, in sabermetric terms, I mean, that's insane. You know, you're talking about an all-time great kind of a season there. So that's why I say Gunnar Henderson undisputed for me. Any other season? Yeah, Adley Rutschman. And while we're talking about this conversation, Jordan Westberg is having a extremely valuable season as well. Defense at third base or second base, what he's done, his consistency at the plate. You know, he runs the base as well, even though he's not, you know, a stolen base guy. I mean, those three guys alone, without even getting into the year at the plate Ryan O'Hearn is having, which is, you know, good, albeit platoon kind of guy. Mountcastle with what he's done, and he's slugging just a hair under 500. He has a chance to be an all-star when you kind of look at the AL landscape at first base. There aren't a ton of great first basemen in the AL, which is so strange because I grew up in an era of Thomas.
It's where everybody just, you know, Palmeiro is the eighth best, you know, first baseman in the American League, right?
I mean, the NL still has some of that with Freddie Freeman and some other, but the AL, it's like, okay, Vlad Guerrero Jr. And then you kind of look at the rest and you say, Mountcastle's got an argument to be in the All-Star game this year. You know, if he can stay hot the next 3 weeks. But the point is, all those other guys, look, they're having really, really good years. Some of them having years that are bordering on great, but what Henderson is doing and what Adley Rutschman is doing specifically, and their positions matter. For what Henderson is doing at the shortstop position for you offensively, what Adley Rutschman is doing as a catcher offensively, let alone what they do with their defense, is just, I mean, it's extraordinary value. And it's why we're talking about a team that's 20 games over 500 before what, Flag Day. So, which just speaks to, hey, you're doing something right. And you've got some really, really special talents at the top of that lineup.
I begin this segment, and I want to praise Adley Rutschman, and all you can do is praise everybody but him, including Gunnar Henderson. You know what?
I just praised him. He's been unbelievable. And keep in mind, in fairness, I also stuck up for him in terms of, okay, he's not walking, but what is he doing instead of walking? He's hitting for a lot more power.
Well,
Rutschman's been amazing. It's just Gunnar to me has just been.
Rubik's Flash is going to have to pay one of them, or, you know, if not two. So
better be at least one, right? Yeah, sure.
All right. Luke Jones is here. We will be there at Coco's on Wednesday from 2 until 5. On Friday, we're going to be down at Cooper's in Fells Point. That's Cooper's Tavern, the original. I'll probably be over at Sláinte bending the elbow as well. It's Fleet Week downtown. The Phillies are in town. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have Pac-Man and Lucky 7 scratch-offs to give away this week. We'll be at Costas next Thursday. Pappas the following Tuesday on the 25th. Lots of guests, lots of fun. All of it brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. I'm going to be telling you more about the salt and the water and the things that they do to well water and all the cool stuff that they do to make our water potable and clean and delicious. Also, our friends at Royal Farms keeping the coffee in the cold roofing mug nice and percolated here as we get through a training camp week here, a little mini camp happening here this week for Luke. We got the Braves in. We've got the Phillies in. All sorts of fun things as summer has begun. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive. And Adley Rutschman.